Mexico. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 430, to be broadcast Wednesday, February 5th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Am I really lovely?
Yes, you are lovely. Okay. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. Even Fran might be able to respond back to you. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar, along with bicycle advocacy, which I think I just forgot to mention. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below because we are live at the moment. Or you can reach out to me at Bicycle Talk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Oh, there's so much going on in Washington right now. Oh, so much, so much. Of course, because the U.S. has traditionally allocated 80% of its federal transportation funding to highways and only 20% to other uses, many of those projects are exactly the kind of deadly, polluting, community-destroying highway expansions that substantially that sustainable transportation advocates want to see paused. That's good news, right? An irony, given the administration's deep ties to the oil industry. Until we know more, though, all advocates can do is fight to hold all levels of government and accountable and of government accountable to the law and to the public interest, and to educate themselves on what's actually going on under the hood of America's transportation system as best as they can. As you know, I've been talking about this for a while because of the change in government that's going on and the loss, the great loss of Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, being replaced by a reality show host or whatever. Whatever, Fox News commentator, can't really remember what the deal was. I talked about it last week. If you want to know more about it, check out the previous episode. It's creating chaos at this point. Can they really do what they're doing? And that's a really good question. Is it legal? That's another really good question. And well, we're not in that world anymore as to whether it's legal or not, are we? So... Anyway, moving on, the bike industry is currently in the middle of its worst ever recession. So one thing, when I got into the bicycle business years ago, I was told it was recession-proof. That was really what it used to be back in the day. But, you know, things changed a lot because there was a huge pandemic-induced spike in interest in bikes along with outdoor activities in 20 and 2021. And followed by a massive drop-off in demand that many insiders are predicting will last until sometime in 2026. Yeah. So, you know, we'll recover from it. And I know we will because there's other things that are out there, other predictions. And I'll go on to the first one of those when I get into the positive side, which is right now. And... what is the increasing popularity of cycling? Cycling is one of the most prevalent sports in the world, according to the World Economic Forum. Over 50% of the global population knew how to ride a bike back in 2015, and the number has rapidly grown in recent years due to COVID, of course. By 2050, over 5 billion bikes will be in use globally. How about that? That's pretty cool, huh? And let's see, what else do I have here on the positive side? Positive thumbs up to YouTube once again. I watched the UCI Cyclocross Worlds races yesterday in full French. In full, a French mud fest with Belgian style mud and course and Belgian and Norwegian dominance. That was in Lavigne, France, and the first 11 men's riders were from Norway or Belgium. Just to give you an idea, who knows how to ride a cross bike? Big, big popular sport there. Anyway, three-time road champion, 17-year-old American Elisa Sarkiskov was seventh in the world championships this past weekend in the women's junior division. And there were frozen ruts and heavy mud, and there were a couple of U.S. riders that showcased some strong rides. I've got a little bit more information on this afterwards. Lopez De San Roman and Scott Funston both broke the top 20 in their respective races. So, not bad. Except I think Scott Funston is done. But that's another story. Maybe I'll talk about that later. Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips of the Week. All right. This is interesting. I've been reading a lot about Tadej Pogačar. I also talk a lot about Tadej Pogačar. He's possibly one of the best cyclists in the world right now. And did you know that last year, for his entire racing year, he rode 165 millimeter crank arms? Now, if you're new to cycling, you go, what's that mean? Well, it doesn't mean a whole lot if you're new to cycling. But what it does mean for those of us who've been riding on bicycles for a long time and gradually increasing the length of our crank arms to give ourselves more power, that's not the right way to go. Yeah, it's funny how, you know, things change over the years. So the data shows that crank length optimized to 41% of your tibia length could be your ideal leg length. At the same time, the data show that most riders are able to adapt a different crank length. But for the pros, where every bit of margin can make a difference, finding the right crank length matters. A shorter crank may not result in a significant difference in the power output, but it could help riders find a hip angle that isn't as acute at the top of the pedal stroke. And that's ultimately why more folks will be using shorter crank arms on road bikes in 2024, 2025. It will likely be more comfortable. And I am going to delve into that in just a minute. And right now, I'm going to move forward to the content of the show. And in the good and bad news department, once again, American Scott Funston finished 19th in the Cyclocross Worlds. But financial realities force him to step away from elite racing. It's time to grow up and make money, he said. Yeah, bicycle racing doesn't really pay. So, especially unless you are, you know, very, very elite, it's a tough place to make a living. It's also a tough place to make a living if you own a bike shop. For all of you bike shop people out there that happen to listen to Bicycle Talk, I know about that. I played that game for a long time. Anyway, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on. Actually, let's jump right over. I'm going to jump right over to the Americans finishing in the Worlds. By the way, I watched those races after getting home from watching my Yukon women Huskies embarrassingly defeat their competition. They kind of ran them over big time. But I went to Hartford yesterday to watch the game. And when I got home, I flipped on the TV, went to YouTube, and decided I'm going to watch the Cyclocross Worlds because it's there. It's all there. So if you want to watch this, you still can. You just go to YouTube and not YouTube TV, but YouTube, the regular YouTube, and type in 2025 Cyclocross Worlds, and you'll have the videos will pop up, both the women's race and the men's race. I watched them both. It was a very interesting race. Like I said, frozen ruts, heavy mud. It was, you know what it looked like? It looked a lot like Hartford from back in the 2017 days. Yeah, it was tricky. Tricky stuff. I saw an awful lot of 1 foot out and dabbing and pushing and like almost like on a scooter on the bike to get through some of the tricky stuff. There were ruts you could see were obviously catching riders' front wheels. It was tough. It was a really, really tough course. And why it should be. It was the World Championships. But, of course, at the end of the day, yeah, it's what we expected would happen, happened. But I'm just going to go over a few of the American riders here just to touch base on this, and then I'll get on to the real deal here. Let's see here. It just turned into, let's see here, riding towards the top 10 for the first lap, it was Benjamin Brodman and Aiden Volmuth. But, you know, eventually they got pushed back and, you know, it is what it is. So, Benjamin finished in 22nd position. Aiden finished in 25th position. And these were junior men, by the way. And Ethan Brown, 34th, Dylan Haynes, 32nd, and Garrett Bishore, 38th. So those were our American junior finishers, which is, you know, we're there. We're down a lot when you take a look at the times. We're definitely getting, we're not doing as well. But, you know, we're still doing better than we were a number of years ago. So if you take a look next here, the U23 women, the first American finisher was 14th, Vita Lopez de San Roman. The second place was Kaya Musgrave. That would be a 25th overall, 14th overall, 25th overall. Let me make sure I get these right. 27th overall was Catherine Sarkisov. I have her in a different place. That's kind of weird. But anyway, 29th was Cassidy Hickey. 32nd was Lauren Zorner. And 34th was our own local favorite, Lizzie Gonzalez. So she's right here from like Dudley, Mass. So she's pretty close by to where we are. In the elite men, it was Scott Funston who actually did really well. So that was kind of cool to see. But of course, the winner of the race was Matthew Vanderpoel. Yeah, Matthew Vanderpoel, who won 7 of the World Cup races now. Amazing. Just amazing. He pushed real hard at the very beginning. The closest person to him in the race by the time the race was over was Wout van Aert. Wout van Aert started 4 lanes back. So he was 4 lines back mainly because he just started racing cross a couple of races ago. So he didn't really have the points to be up on the front line because of that, but he still ended up finishing 2nd, and it was... Oh, I think about 40 seconds was the distance between Matthew Vanderpoel and Wout van Aert. But Matthew just got such a huge lead to begin with that Wout van Aert was in, I don't know, 19th or 20th position, something like that, and he had to claw back and pull in all those other riders, which is pretty impressive. Thibaut Nies from Belgium was 3rd, and the only 2 American starters were, or 3 American starters were Scott Funston, Eric Bruner, and Andrew Strohmeyer. And actually, Andrew Strohmeyer was listed as a DNS, so he did not start. Scott was 19th, and Eric was 42nd. So It was, it's a tough race. It's just, you know, it's the world's every, it was way cool to check out because the venue itself was really, really cool. It was well attended, huge crowds, really fun festive stuff, good stuff all around. So anyway, that's your, let's see, I think I had another little piece here on this, but, the men's race once again was pretty easily dominated by Matthew Vanderpool. Matthew Vanderpool now wins his, what is he? He's now tied, I think, for the most wins ever, seventh elite men's title. And there's only one other rider, and that goes way, way back in time. Wout van Aert was second. Yep, that all happened. But in the women's race was very, very interesting. And once again, on the world end of things, the women are becoming more and more competitive in cross. It was a neck and neck race. It really was. It was so, so cool. Very, very close all the way. I thought I had a piece here on that. And anyway, it came down to, where is she here? Oh, I know she's in here somewhere. It was Lucinda Brand, and it was Femme. Oh, gosh. I can't remember her full name here. Oh, here we go. Femme Van Empel was first, and Lucinda Brand was second. And it was down to a final lap. They were coming into one of the three or four final turns, and Van Empel kind of moved Brand over into a fence, and so there was a little bit of a stutter, and because of that, because you don't want to crash into the fence, so yeah, could it be a weird move? Could it not? I don't know. You know, it's hard to say. It's cyclocross. Anything can happen. And did she push her into the fence, or was there a rut that caught her front wheel that pushed them both over? I mean, there's just so many things. Lucinda Brand was actually disappointed, but she said she was in no way had any hard feelings on the situation because she said she knew she was done at that point anyway, which is kind of interesting. But good stuff. Fun stuff. So if you get a chance to watch it, it's on YouTube. Check it out. It's pretty cool. So and that is it for me and cyclocross. You won't have to listen to me talk about cyclocross anymore until next fall. Or, you know, probably more like towards the end of the summer when the training series start here. Yeah, those are already, I think, on the calendar. So, yep, it's all true. Seventh title for Matthew Vanderpool, and he equals Eric de Vlaeminck's record, defeating Van Aert by 45 seconds. So that's about what it was. That record goes back 52 years ago. So pretty cool stuff. Matthew's still 30 years old. He's got a shot at breaking it. There's a really, really good chance he could pull it off. All he has to do is stay healthy and not broken, and he'll be fine. And you know how it is. Cycling can be a tough. So it was the Netherlands. It was Belgium. It was the Netherlands. It was Belgium. It was the cast of characters. It's very obvious where the sport is dominant, and it was kind of cool, but I was just really impressed with the course itself. The course itself was really, really cool. So that latest triumph further cements the 30-year-old's dominance, having won all world titles since 2019, except for 2022, when Britain's Tom Pidcock claimed the gold in the United States, while Vanderpool and Vanner opted not to make the long trip. So there probably was not going to be any kind of a pause in that if they had decided to come to the U.S. and do the World's Race here. So it's great stuff. I've loved watching this kid. He started out as a junior. He and Van Aert back and forth at each other the whole time. They've just, they're just great, fun cyclists to watch. And they're both specialists in the classics. So we're going to see a lot more of them. And we'll see a lot more of them here in 2025 as the world calendar starts to fill out and things start happening. I'm looking forward to it. And like I said, if they can stay healthy, we'll be looking at it again. Hi, Franny. There you are, right behind me.
I have a great shirt.
You do. You have a great shirt on. It's got hearts on.
There's hearts on it.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. So anyway, that's the Worlds, and it was fun. And again, I love doing it. I actually played from 2 weeks ago, I played one of the world championship races that I had watched for my spin class, because oddly enough, in the studio where we have all of our spin bikes, there is a gigantic TV that's up on the wall that no one really knows why it's there, because no one's ever really used it for anything. So I put the cyclocross race up on the wall because I just, I airplayed it from my phone.
During class. Wow.
And it was kind of cool because then you've got, you're there, you're working hard in the class, but you're also watching the cyclocross race at the same time. It was fun, and goofing around. Just goofing around, anything to keep people's interest. I have started the extreme spin class again this year. It's 11 weeks of hour and a half long classes. We called it extreme spin a long time ago when I first started doing it, just because of the length of the class. But I'm going to add to that, there's a level of difficulty that comes with this class, which is definitely challenging. Now, it's not for everyone. I do get a number of my outdoor road people that come and take the class because they're looking for the fitness that they can get out of it. And, it is going to make them get motivated and push themselves really hard. But that brings me on to another little thing here. And this is, and I'll hold this up on the screen so you can see it. But what it says is 8-week winter base build plan. Yeah, so if you're looking to build yourself up in 8 weeks worth of time to get strong to be out there riding on the road or riding your mountain bike in the woods, this is a great plan to get you in shape for the coming season. So everybody wants to be in great shape for the coming season. The minute the weather breaks, you want to be feeling really, really fit. So it's really important to, focus on that at this time of year. But as always, you got to start slow and work your way up. So I pulled this off of, I believe this came from Bicycling Magazine, but weeks 1-3, aerobic foundation base. Foundation base is so, so important, and people just do not understand that riding slow is actually going to make you faster, and this is kind of how it all works. So you start out by Monday having a rest day. What does that mean? What does rest day mean? Rest day does not mean that you just go out and do something easier. It can, but it's probably not really what was intended for the workout and this plan that you're looking at. A rest day is a rest day. Don't ride your bike. That's it. Don't ride the bike. That's it. I'm not going to ride my bike. That doesn't mean you go out for a 10-mile run instead, by the way. I have some fairly obsessive friends that would look at a rest day as, well, if I'm not going to ride my bike, at least I can go out and do a 5-mile hike. No, that's not a rest day. Not a rest day. Rest day means rest. Rest day means put a video on and watch people doing things, or or read a book, or you know, make since it's a Monday, maybe you could make, you know, a number of meals that you would be eating throughout the week. You know, you gotta not do something physical. That's what a rest day is. Tuesday, you do a 60-minute easy spin, and we are talking about 85 to 95 cadence, and really like zone 2 is what you're looking at, just heart rate zone 2. If you don't know what that is, you probably shouldn't be training yourself. But if you do want to train yourself, you should know your heart rate zones and why you're in them and what they're all about. I spent today, after teaching an extreme spin class on Sunday, I spent the entire day in zone 1 and 2. That was it. That's it. That's where my heart rate was. No higher. I'm letting my body relax and recover, but I'm still getting the benefit of turning the pedals on the bike, so that part's good. On Wednesday, you're looking at strength training, upper body and core. All right, yeah, that's something you don't do on the bicycle, right? Yeah, you should do some strength training. You want to do some light weights. You want to do, I tend to like the high rep, lower weight method of doing things. I also like to do planks and things that are going to really focus on my core. There's some machines that I can use at my local gym that will help me with my core also. I tend to not do the old-fashioned, you know, sit-up crunch type things. Not real good for the back, so I don't do that. I also, in the wintertime, I do a lot more yoga, so I think that you can get quite a bit out of that, quite a benefit out of that. I almost fell asleep this morning on the floor, though, I have to admit, before I was getting ready to go to my class, because I found myself down in child's pose and very content. But anyway, it helps me open up my hips. It helps me open up a lot of my joints. It makes a pretty big difference. So I would say strength training, upper body and core, and you're really there are no heart rate zones there, because you're not doing anything cardiovascular so that is on. And then there's also listed here a 60 to 75 minute endurance ride. And that would be also, again, in zone 2. So you're just putting the time in. That's all you're doing there. And on Thursday, actually, I think this is actually listed for Thursday. Yes, it is. Cadence drills also go along with that. So 5 by 1 minute with 2 minute recoveries. And so what you're looking for in a cadence drill, you're looking to get your RPMs up higher than what you normally would do. I always say 10 RPMs higher than what your normal cadence is. They say 100 plus here. And that is 5 times 1 minute. Okay, so you're going to do 5 minutes of these, just 1 minute at a time, with at 100 plus RPMs with a 2 minute recovery in between. Sounds boring? Goes by pretty quickly. You'd be surprised. And plus, you're also in the middle of a 60 to 75 minute ride also at the same time. But you're at zone 2 once again. Friday, strength training, lower body. Again, you're not on the bike. That's it. You're just doing strength training. You're training your legs, your hamstrings, your quads, your glutes. You're doing all that kind of work right there. I find that one of the easiest things to do if you don't have a gym to work with is, but you have a wall, do some wall sits against the wall. Yeah, you just kind of back yourself up against the wall and put yourself in like a chair seated position and hold it and time it out. And, you know, you can do, I'm not going to tell you what you can do, but I generally tend to do 30 seconds on and 30 seconds off, and or maybe 30 seconds on and a minute and a half off, and then go back and do another 30 seconds and repeat those. They do a lot for your legs, a whole lot for your legs. So Saturday is a 60-minute endurance ride. Again, you're still in zone two. Remember, these are weeks 1 through 3, so you can repeat this week after week after week. And Sunday, you're going to ride long. You're going to go for a whole 2 hours on Sunday. So not a lot, once again. And you're looking at zone two, once again. You're keeping your heart rate down low on a long ride. You may have to do that on a trainer to be able to maintain that, unless you have really flat roads around where you live, and you might be able to pull that off. And then forced climb intervals, 3 by 5 minutes. So 5 minute intervals at pretty hard level. We did something like this Sunday in the indoor spin class. It was similar to this. And you do that for 3 weeks. Repeat it every week, every week, every week. Remembering that Monday is that rest day, you know, that I'm going to make food for the weekday. And then when you get to week 4, after going through that repetition, it's called recovery. So even though it doesn't seem like it's that hard, the repetition of it does catch up with you, and you need to take a rest week. So the recovery week is week 4, and again, Monday is a rest day. 45 minutes of easy spinning in zone 2 on Tuesday. Wednesday, gentle stretching, or maybe take a yoga class. That's great. Thursday, you're going to do 45 to 60 minutes of easy spinning. And once again, zone 2, that's what we're looking for. Rest day on Friday, again, so day off. Now we're making food for the weekend. So going on to Saturday, where you do a 60-minute endurance ride, zone 2 again, and a long ride on Sunday of 90 minutes, which is the hour and a half like I teach in my extreme class on Sundays, and that is again at zone 2. Not the way that I'm doing my structured classes for the people who they want the hard work, so I do that. Do I always participate in it, or do I teach it? I teach it a lot. I participating in it, I really can only do two, or only like to do, let's say, 2 really hard workouts a week. Otherwise, everything else is kind of what we used to call back in the day garbage miles. Yeah, good old garbage miles. They work pretty good. You know, you're still getting your base. You're still getting time in the saddle. And I tend to put it in as time in the saddle, not as average speed or you know, just I stay away from that, because that is that's a rabbit hole you just don't want to go down, because you can get yourself way over your head, and when your head gets into it, and when your head tells you you have to go hard all the time, guess what? You're gonna cook, you're gonna burn out, or you're gonna hurt something, and it's not gonna work well for you. So let's move on to weeks 5 through 8. And staying on this program, remember, we've had lots of long, slow distance, the old, what we used to call LSD riding, long, slow distance riding. So you got a lot of core and base that you've worked on. And now you hit the next 3 weeks, 5 through 8. And of course, Monday is the rest day. And Tuesday is 3 by 5 sweet spot intervals with a 3 minute recovery. So now you're pushing up into zone 4. Now you're pushing your heart rate zone 3, zone 4, depending on where you're at with your fitness and what you can handle. Your heart rate's going to be pretty high. If you hit zone 4, you're going to be over 80% of your max. So you're going to be working very hard. And I like to call it uncomfortably hard. That's how I word it in my spin classes. And you're looking at 3 by 5 minute sweet spot intervals with a 3 minute recovery. So 3 minutes on, 3 to 5 minutes off. Got that? All right. Wednesday, strength, upper body, core, not on the bike. Doing a little bit more weight work, maybe a little more, maybe you've increased now to the point where you can do a little bit more core instead of holding your plank for 20 seconds, maybe you're holding your plank for 40 seconds. Whatever it is that you work out, don't go into the world championship plank thing, though. It's not good for you, and it's completely unnecessary. It's not beneficial. Enough said. We go to Thursday, and we're looking at 75-minute endurance ride in zone 2, forcing some intervals in there, 5x3 minimum, and zone 3. Friday, strength training, lower body, off the bike. Saturday, okay, 90-minute endurance ride, so an hour and a half on the bike, zone 2 to 3. Tempo finish, which is zone 3, so it's a little bit higher. And then that's basically what you're going to do for 90 minutes. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it will help you. You got to realize that you don't have to ride really long all the time to get faster on your bike. You really don't. And then Sunday, there's your long ride. It's 2.5 hours. So you're going to be on the bike for a while. You're looking at 2.5 hours in zone 2 with a couple of forced climbs in there, 3x5 minutes, actually. Forced climbs in zone 3, not 4. Don't go all the way up and over. Run it right on that edge. I like to call that comfortably hard, which is basically about 70 to 75% of your max. And I didn't get that right. 75 to 78% of your max. So you're just under 80%, and that should keep you right in zone 3. That's the last 3 weeks. Now you've done 8 weeks. If you pay attention to this very closely and you've done 8 weeks, I highly recommend that you put this into a spreadsheet or something that you can reference on a daily and weekly basis, so you can take a look at it and really stay with the program. Stay with the program, you will get stronger, you will get better, and you know, you'll have a much happier time when it comes to the when it comes to your outdoor riding, because you know, you get outside now, 8 weeks later, the weather's starting to turn, the birds are starting to sing, you can smell spring in the air. It's a beautiful thing. And there you go. And you're all set to go, because now you've got legs, and you've got a little bit of cardio in you. And then you get out on the roads and you come to the grim reality that you probably need to do some more base work. But that's okay. This is good. This is a really good winter base plan build. And it gets you slowly into shape, which is a better way of doing things than to try to rapidly charge into it. Rapidly charging into it never gives you a great benefit. So please be careful. Be safe when you get back out on the road again. Watch out for the crazies. And you know who they are. They're the ones that drive those big, massive vehicles down the road. So you definitely got to watch out for them. But, you know, you can do it. You can do it. Someone said to me, they said, I can't ride on the road anymore. I just can't do it. It's just so dangerous. And I told them about the radar that I have on my bike, and they were surprised to hear about this. They'd never heard of it before. I was surprised they hadn't heard about it before, because I talk about it all the time on my show. I think it's the best invention that's ever been made for a bicycle over the last, 3 or 4 decades. I'll give it that much credit. It's amazing. It really is. I don't feel unsafe on the roads. I feel very safe on the roads right now. And I think that I'm also super careful about that. Anyway, let's go back to Tadej Pogačar and his 165mm crank arms. I'm intrigued by this. I've got really long femurs, so I'm not really sure that this is going to work for me. And I have to find a calculation of sorts, or go talk to my friend Steve about, who is a bike fitter, about, you know, is this something I should be looking at or not? Are my femurs too long? A lot of people, I ride right now 172.5s. I dropped down on one of my bikes to 170s. And that's what I used to race on, was 170s. They do make it easier for you to spin. You can spin your legs around a lot faster if you've got a little bit shorter crank arm. Once you get up to the 175mm length crank arms, it's really, really hard to turn that. That's a big circle you're spinning around. And it makes a big difference. difference because you're looking at a full 10 millimeters because it's 5 millimeters on each side. So it's a big circle. Anyway, here's the thing. You do have to be careful about this. I would probably recommend, I would recommend talking to someone who is professional at this. A professional fitter would be a really, really good thing to do. I'm planning on doing that as soon as I get my health issues fixed with my legs. I am planning on going and getting another fit because it's been a really long time since I had my last bike fit. And my body has kind of changed over the years. It happens as you get older, things get different and you got to compensate for that in some way. If you want to continue to maintain your power and maintain your ability to ride the bike. So why is Tadej Pogačar using 175 millimeter crank arms, and why aren't more racers and riders doing that? Okay. Tadej might be on 175s in the Tour de France. He was riding 165 millimeter crank arms in the Giro, and according to other accounts, he was on 167.5 shortly after switching from 170 millimeter cranks. So if you have the resources of which you can make those gradual changes and step yourself down, that's really wonderful. He's a professional rider. He's got plenty of money. I'm sure the teams gave them all the equipment he needed, and he made that change pretty easily. So you take a look at somebody like, and this is where the difference comes in. Someone like Primož Roglič, he's 5'9", and so he's a little bit taller, and he's riding 172.5 millimeter crank arms, which is basically what I'm doing too, and I've got legs that are long enough to be able to compensate for that. But again, should I be on 170s? I don't know. It's a really good question. The trend is going shorter. Things are kind of, I'm not a professional bike racer, okay? I never will be a professional bike racer, but I do pay really, really close attention to it. You take a look at someone like Remco Evenepoel. He's riding 165 millimeter cranks. They're all starting to come down in their size. And even Richard Carapaz, another professional rider that we talk about a lot on the show, he's at 167.5s. So it's a little bit shorter than the norm that they would normally put him on. So who's on 170 millimeter cranks? Mark Cavendish. He's a big guy. He's 5'9", okay, and a very large man. But what does he do for a living? He sprints, okay? So he wants to be able to rev up and really spin out his legs when it comes to a big sprint. So even though he is as big as he is, and I would probably have seen him on a 172.5 because of his size, he's on 170s. So it's all about what works best for you biomechanically, and there are so many things that you can do now to get that evaluated. And again, I push you in the direction of finding a professional bike fitter that's somewhere near you and have a chat, have a little conversation with them and talk to them about, you know, where should I be? How should I be doing this? Because yeah, I'm going to say it. It's bad, Franny. I'm going to say it. Size matters.
Oh.
Yep. Yep. So, anyway, who would have known that shorter size matters? But anyway, that's where we're at here with Tadej Pogačar and his crank arms. And I know it seems kind of crazy, but, you know, at a certain point, you start to look at, what can I do to get better on my bike? And getting better on your bike doesn't mean you're going to be going faster. It just means you're going to be more comfortable, or, you know, if you're doing long rides, you're going to want to be comfortable for a long period of time. So there's just minor adjustments you can make. Again, professional fitter, great idea. Great, great idea. Okay, now I have a kind of a fun little thing that I pulled up here, and see if I can work my way down here. Just simple questions. What country likes cycling the most? Anybody got any ideas out there? I'm going to answer the question right after I ask it. But bicycle use is very popular in some European countries, such as the Netherlands and Denmark. Cycling also has a significant share among the main modes of transport in some of those countries. So, yeah, it's the Netherlands, and it's Denmark, and guess what? They're the ones that are also...
Netherlands or Denmark? Which is it?
It's both.
Oh.
It's both. Very, very popular in both the Netherlands and also in Denmark. And so that's where more people are cycling than any other place in the world, which is kind of cool. So that's that. And then these all have sub, you know, articles that go along with them. But that doesn't make any sense. What's the largest bicycle company in the world? Anybody know? It's Giant Manufacturing, commonly known as Giant. It's a Taiwanese bicycle manufacturer recognized as the world's largest designer and manufacturer. They have manufacturing facilities in Taiwan, the Netherlands, China, and Hungary. And they have future plans for Vietnam to be a fifth location. So that's Giant. Giant also makes bicycles for other companies that have a different label on them. The companies, like, I'm not 100% sure how many of the bikes are coming from to Trek from Giant. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I do believe that some of the Treks are actually Giants. What's the number one bike city in the United States?
Davis, California.
Not.
No.
Not.
Portland, Oregon.
This one surprised me. I thought Portland was going to be the one, yeah. San Francisco, California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously it's West Coast based for sure. As far as your body goes, what does cycling target the most? Franny's working on it here. No, your quads are the number one muscles you recruit while cycling, and your glutes being number two. The wattage cottage. The back door. Yeah, that's it. So anyway, those are your two strong points. They're real strong targets for muscles. And what is the least bike friendly state? Here we go.
Florida.
Nope.
Jersey.
Nope. I'll give you a clue. It's not Missouri, Nebraska, South Carolina, or Alabama, which are also sinking to the bottom of the barrel, but it's Mississippi.
It is.
It's Mississippi.
I have a friend who lives in Mississippi, and yes, he rides all the time, and he's having a great time.
And it is not a very bicycle-friendly state. So, what is the oldest bike brand? There's a good one for you.
It's not Schwinn.
It's not Schwinn. No. Oh my God, no! Schwinn's like an American name. Think about the base of where bicycles were originally made. You're gonna have to go over to Europe. You definitely got to go to Europe for this. And it is
Bianchi.
Yep, that's what it is. It's Bianchi. Yep, commonly known as Bianchi, the world's oldest bicycle manufacturing company in existence, having pioneered the use of equal-sized wheels with pneumatic rubber tires. The company was founded in Italy in 1885, and in addition to bicycles, it also produced motorcycles from 1897 to 1967. That's Bianchi. And Fran and I both ride on Bianchis.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun? That's because I used to work for them. So, anyway, it's one of those things. Let's see. What have we missed here? What is the bicycle capital of the United States?
But you already said San Francisco.
No, that was the most popular city.
Oh.
But what's the bicycle capital? The king of cycling in the U.S., inspiring cities all across the nation to follow in its footsteps.
Portland, Oregon.
You got it. Portland, Oregon. That's it. Portland, Oregon.
I've ridden my bike in Portland, Oregon.
Right. I have two.
Yes.
What state has the most bicycle accidents?
Florida.
You got it. Number one, Florida. The highest rate of fatal bicycle accidents per 100,000 people compared to all other states.
And I'm so pleased to however, that I regularly ride my bike there.
Yeah, however, the rate has experienced a decrease of 16.8% nationwide. But they're still number one. How about that, Florida? Yeah, you don't have to just watch out for alligators. The safest cycling city in the world.
Safest?
The safest. Think back to what the most popular places to ride a bicycle in the world were. There were two countries that were
Netherlands,
number one.
Netherlands and Denmark.
Right, right.
So it must be in the Midwest. How about
No. Safest cycling city in the world.
It has to be
over in Europe.
Okay,
it has
so
to be.
It's either going to be Amsterdam or Copenhagen.
It's Copenhagen. You got it. Right. That's it. And the Danish capital is very safe for cyclists and for bikes, thanks to low theft rate and no car days. Copenhagen continues to invest lots of funds in cycling infrastructure. Most residents cycle through the long, hard Danish winter.
Remember my Uncle Ben
about that?
Always used to ride his bike for transportation.
Yep. It's, that's it. Let's see. So what were old bicycles called? And they go back to the first penny farthing was invented in 1871 by a British engineer, James Starley. The penny farthing came after the development of the hobby horse and the French velocipede or bone shaker, all versions of early bikes. And I think that the penny farthing was the first one that actually had pedals on it, because the other ones were just kind of, you just scooted with them is what you did. The hobby horse was definitely a scoot type bike. So anyway, let's see. Is there anything else in here that's... What are the bikes that are least likely to be stolen? There you go. Any bike is easily stolen, but not all bikes are worth stealing. So these mostly want bikes that will command a decent price and or it can be easily sold. Expensive looking road bikes and mountain bikes top the list. Roadsters and hybrids with practical features such as mudguards are less likely to be pinched. There you go. That's it. So a practical bike is much less of a chance of being stolen. We already did this. Okay, let's go to the safest state in the United States to ride a bike in. This one kind of surprised me. With only 8 bicyclist deaths out of 1,275 total deaths in fatal crashes, bicyclists represent just 0.63% of traffic fatalities in the state. The low percentage highlights that the roads are relatively safer for those who choose to bike. Guess which state that is?
Oregon.
Not.
Washington.
Not.
California.
Come east, my lady. Come east.
How far east?
Not all the way east.
Okay. How about Wisconsin?
No.
Or Illinois?
No, you would think. But no. This one took me by complete surprise.
New York?
I did not see this. No, you're too far east.
Too far east. So it's got to be Midwest.
It's a Midwest state. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Like Indiana?
You're close. Ohio.
Ohio.
You got it. So anyway, this is, we already kind of touched on that one. The biggest bike collector in the world is, guess that's not true, because this is a motorcycle bike. They call it a motorcycle bike. It's Jay Leno. He has more motorcycles than anybody else in the world. Not going there. Let's see, what else? Number one cycling company in the world. We already did that one. And who's number one? Oh, this is interesting. The number one bike racer in the world was Valentino Rossi, who was an Italian racer born the 16th of February, 1979. Is an Italian racing driver, a former professional motorcycle. Oh, that's why I don't know about him. He's a motorcycle guy. They mixed in motorcycles with this silly survey. So that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for bicycles. We want pedals. We don't want motors. I mean, e-bikes, we can go there. We can definitely go there. But we don't want motors. That's not what we're looking for. We did this. All right, let's see. What else do we have on this list of things to look at? We've been through all of that. We've got some things coming up, like events like Fatty Cross on February 9th at Haddam Neck. Our friends out at Airline Cycles are putting on, and that is, like I said, it's on Bike Reg, and it's called Fatty Cross. Yeah, F-A-T-T-Y Cross. The Frozen 4 training series starts on March 2nd and goes through the end of March to the 24th, and that is a training series which is in Farmington, Connecticut. The National Bike Summit is March 11th through the 13th in 2025 at the MLK Junior Memorial Library in Washington, D.C. The Natchog Epic, which is a gravel ride that I am involved with my friend Richard Fries, is going to be on I know I have it here. March 23rd. And there's an 82-mile ride, a 60-mile ride, a 48-mile ride, a 32-mile ride, and a 10-mile ride. And depending on what the weather's like at the end of March, which could be anything, it will be epic. Ciclismo Classico Bicycle Film Festival, Tuesday, March 18th at 6 p.m. in the Somerville Theater, 55 Davis Square, Somerville, Mass. And it says here, 49 Holland Street, Somerville, Mass. Also, I don't know why there's two locations there. I'll have to double check that with Lauren, but I told her I would shout her out on this, and that's definitely coming up. And of course, the Taipei Bike Show, March 26th through the 29th, where we'll get a preview of all the cool new stuff coming into cycling, if there will be any cool new stuff coming into cycling because of the quote-unquote recession. So we'll see. So it's 2025. What are you looking for? More miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the bike rides that you take more by slowing down and smelling the roses? Yeah, you will have roses to smell soon. It's right around the corner. I can feel it, okay? I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and safe places to ride your bicycle, and, you know, get out and do something about it. And hey, take that pedal and run challenge where you park your car one day and just ride your bike instead. Do errands on it, ride back and forth to work, back and forth to school, whatever it may be. Take the challenge. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Yeah. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment down below the video. And you can send me an email if you're listening to it on the radio or an audio file at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Save mine. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. See you next week. Get on your bike.